Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
In the 1940s, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, a married couple from New York City, allegedly spied on the United States and secretly passed top-secret information on nuclear weapons and other military secrets to America's biggest foe, the Soviet Union. Classified records became open to the public in the mid-90s and cast serious concerns on their involvement and punishment. Was justice truly served, or did they take the fall for someone else? This is True Crime Cast.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie here with John. What's up, man?
Hey, man. It's another great day. Football season's still here, and we're going to talk about crime, so things are good.
It feels cold today. It feels fall today. I like it.
I love how we're like very, I don't know, yin and yang. Like, yeah. You're wearing hoodie and shorts. I'm wearing pants and a short sleeve. I'm confused about what the weather's like. It's cold. It's hot. Who knows?
Our friend Ray, who's a regular guest on Bless Their Hearts, has kind of changed my ward. Like, I would always wear a hoodie and shorts if I could.
Yeah. I've done it. It's comfortable. I didn't have a hoodie that I wanted to put on today, or I'd have probably done the same thing.
Well, you only have those Tennessee ones. But that's for another day. We got a case today, John.
Espionage.
We've had some heavy, gruesome murder cases, and I'm happy to have a spy case today.
A lot of children murder lately. A lot of the last week we did a serial killer. This one, I mean, people do die. Somewhat unjustifiably, but it's not near as heavy as weeks past. So yeah, let's dig into this one.
It's not. And before we went on there, John confessed to me that he's not a big espionage guy. This isn't something that gets him as interested.
It sounds awful. I'd rather be talking about a murder. But maybe we shouldn't say any of that.
Maybe you should say that you are not an espionage guy and leave it at that.
Fair enough. But, hey, really, this is a good case, so don't let the no murder take you away. This is a really interesting one. We always end up with, was justice served? And I think that conversation at the end of this is going to be really interesting. So let's dig into it, man. Why don't you get the ball rolling?
Yeah, unlike John, I'm super excited not to have a murder case. This is going to be great. And it started in the early 1950s. The world was still kind of coming off of World War II and adjusting to what does life look like after that. There were close to 100 million people that died in World War II, John. And that's, I don't know, like, we keep seeing these numbers of deaths due to coronavirus and how awful and devastating it's been around the country and around the world, and we're not even close to that. The war was so destructive and the world was so haunted by it that new organizations and systems were developed around the world to ensure that peace prevailed in the future. Part of those efforts was the creation of nuclear weapons by the United States. The thought was that the development of these weapons, the strength of them, they could literally wipe out humanity. So that would be a deterrent against dictators who were determined to start massive wars, because they knew that there was a trump card of sorts in the nuclear bomb. In the 1940s, the United States used the Manhattan Project to develop nuclear bombs and wipe out the Japanese cities of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, which essentially brought World War II to an end. The U.S. was the only country on the planet with the knowledge and ability at the time to produce these super powerful, awful weapons, and they guarded that knowledge really closely, afraid it might fall into the wrong hands. And if the wrong person gets a hold of this, it could be the end of life on Earth, essentially. But that didn't stop Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, a married couple from New York City, from allegedly spying on the United States and secretly passing top-secret information about nuclear weapons and other military secrets to America's biggest foe at the time, the Soviet Union. The Rosenbergs were eventually caught and remain the only U.S. spies executed during peacetime. Nearly 70 years after their deaths, debate still rages on as to their level of guilt and whether or not they deserved to be charged and eventually executed.
So let's talk about Julius and Ethel. We'll go back to kind of their backstory, if you will. They were both born to Jewish parents in Manhattan, and they were both born not too long after the turn of the 20th century. So Julius, even in his youth, made a name for himself in the city when he joined a highly controversial organization called the Young Communist League of the United States of America. I'm going to go ahead and just say not a very popular decision. Like, that was very bad then. Wouldn't be great today, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is the Cold War, right? This is what we're talking about. So much distrust and suspicion around anything that sounded like communism in America. There were people on lists, and it was, I don't know, just a lot of uneasiness and, again, distrust around the subject across the country.
I feel like if employers knew that you were a part of that organization, it might end up in you not getting a job. Like, it was a big deal. It was treated as such. And I think it's important to note that going forward in this story. Julius eventually went on to college, and he obtained a degree in electrical engineering. So he's pretty smart feller. If that's what we say in Tennessee when you get an education. Ethel was not doing bad for herself. She also joined the Young Communist League and was known for organizing labor unions within New York City. This couple married in 1939, and over the next 10 years, they would have two sons, Michael and Robert. Now, Julius's training as an electrical engineer gave him access to a really nice job in 1940. As the United States was preparing for their entry into World War II, a position opened up at an army lab in New Jersey, and that's where he was able to get hired in 1940. And he would spend the next 5 years as an engineer for the U.S. Army, where he was working on some really cutting-edge technology back then, including military radar and guided missiles. So guided missiles in 1945 sounds remarkable. So this was new technology back then, and he was really one of the people involved working with that.
Yeah, the way that these labs worked, everything was supposed to be a secret, right? So he worked as an engineer, so the scientists working on things would come up with an idea and just come in and say, can you make this? And then he would make it work, and he wasn't even supposed to know what it was for. But, I mean, if you're making a laser,
yeah,
you can guess what it's going to be used for.
In my research, I learned that he was never given, like, complete blueprints to anything, but rather, like you said, hey, we need this part machined. Can you get that for us? And
yep,
he would do that. So basically he would eventually have the entire blueprints if he pieced it all together, but he was only given like a piece at a time. In 1945, around the close of World War II, his military superiors discovered communist allegiance and quickly fired him from this position. So like I said, it would stop you from getting a job, but in his case, they found out he was in that organization, and they fired him.
Especially from the U.S. military, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I get that today. You wouldn't want somebody in your group who might have their foot in another group too, but back then this was a huge deal. So during this time, he worked at Fort Monmouth. Did I say that right?
Close enough. Yeah.
I have to say a lot of hard words in this section, but he was approached by a man there named Semyon Simonov, who was a famed Russian spy who had also had training as an engineer. Simonov was introduced to Julius through a mutual friend who Julius knew through the Communist Party. In 1942, Simonov convinced Julius Rosenberg to disclose some of the classified information that he had from his work as an army engineer. Julius would routinely leak highly classified military secrets to Simonov and other Russian contacts for 2 years, and was paid based on the usefulness of the materials that he was supplying.
So in a lot of ways, the distrust was, like, it's proven to be necessary here, as secrets are being stolen and sold to the Soviet Union and the enemies of America at the time. Among the thousands of documents Rosenberg gave to Russian agents was a revolutionary fuse for a missile and the complete plans for a new warplane that was in development in the United States, as well as other weapon systems that they were developing. It said that every time that he reported to these spies he was working with, he would give them 600 to 1,000 pages worth of information. So it's not like he's smuggling out a picture of something that he made or a quarter of a blueprint he was given. Like, he's given them lots and lots of stuff. Over the course of his spying career, he would also recruit other communist sympathizers to give secrets in a similar way. In 1944, he was charged by his Russian handlers to recruit the most consequential new spy yet, Ethel Rosenberg's little brother, who was working on the Manhattan Project, which was the code name for the operation where they were developing the nuclear weapons.
And that's around my neck of the woods is where that was happening at. That was down close to Knoxville, Tennessee. We took field trips there as a middle school student.
That sounds dangerous.
Well, they were done building bombs at that point.
So Julius recruited his brother-in-law, as well as another person that worked at the Manhattan Project, an engineer named Russell McNutt. Julius was paid $100, which would be about $1,500 today, as a bonus for recruiting such valuable spies that were close to such valuable information. McNutt would eventually provide the Russian government with plans and valuable information on how to enrich uranium in order to build nuclear weapons. So this is, again, this is legitimate spy stuff here, John. They recruited civilians that they knew were supportive of the Communist Party, which was, at the time, kind of against what America was doing. So that's the tension of the Cold War made all this very, very real. And I think when we talk about spies or we watch spy movies, we kind of say, oh, well, it's probably not really like that. This story seems like it's really like that. In 1949, just 5 years after Rosenberg's work had led to the Russians processing nuclear weapons information, the Soviet Union had built their first test nuclear weapon. The United States was shocked, believing they're the only country with information and technology capable of producing these weapons. Immediately, the United States intelligence community suspected that there was a leak, that there was a spy inside the military that was sharing secrets about the nuclear weapons program, and they launched an investigation into this. By January of 1950, 4 months after they started this investigation, the government had identified a British physicist who was assisting in the Manhattan Project. U.S. officials identified that scientist, Klaus Fuchs. You didn't get that name.
Yeah, thank God.
A good one.
I was reading it with you as Klaus Fuchs. I don't know. So how did you say it?
Fuchs.
Fuchs.
He had been working with an American named Harry Gold to distribute classified information to the Russians. In interrogations, once they were caught, Gold started to name other people inside the government who had been releasing information to these foreign powers. The chain of spies eventually found its way to Julius Rosenberg.
This is like stuff out of a movie. Like, this doesn't seem... When I think about this kind of stuff, like, this just makes a good movie. It's not real life. But this is actually happening.
Yeah.
It's crazy stuff. Like, how do you find yourself contacted by a Russian to get all this stuff?
Like, yeah.
Especially back then. How can they track you down and know that you're going to be the guy to help them with what they want?
And
crazy
it,
to me.
And, it like, there's so many what ifs. What if Julius had said no? Or what if they approached somebody different to do this and didn't get the secrets? Or approached somebody and got more secrets? Like, these little details of how this information was shared, if it happened any differently, could certainly change the world. And it was on July 17th of 1950 that Julius Rosenberg was arrested after his brother-in-law identified him as the most prolific Russian spy in the United States.
What a brother-in-law. Like, not just turning him in, but saying, no, he's actually the ringleader of everything that is awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Julius had tried to get his brother-in-law to flee the country before he was captured, but he was unable to do so. And then they had Julius's name. And within a month, Ethel was also arrested. And after the break, we'll talk about the continued investigation and the trial that followed.
Hey guys, Jamie and John here, and we want to tell you how excited we are to be able to offer new merchandise for our podcasts.
Yeah, we have partnered with a company called TeePublic. We have listed the links to our store below in our show notes. We've also put those on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. But Jamie, there's a ton of stuff you can find over there.
T-shirts, phone cases, mugs, travel mugs, hoodies, and even masks, John.
There is a ton of new products over there. It's way better than the store we used to have. You can customize your order. Like if you want a shirt that's yellow or green or blue, whatever, you can make that happen. So go over there and check that out today, and you will not be disappointed. So Rosenberg was believed by the American government to be the leader of all other spies who were supplying the USSR with valuable information. But they also felt that Ethel was actively engaged in espionage as well. They knew about her husband's actions, and they were adamant that she would also face charges. Government records now indicate that the government intentionally pressured other witnesses to change their story about Ethel in order to ensure that she would face charges. So I guess it's important to know how we got these records. So all this information was classified until, what, I think around the 90s? 96, yeah. In there. So after all this information becomes unclassified, that's how we now know the rest of the story. And it's a doozy.
Yeah, we have information from those interrogations and how they were pressured to tell stories in a certain way. We also had a lot of information that our government decoded from Russian transmissions and Russian messages that kind of, and we'll get into it a little later, shines light on what really happened, is not only the stories that were told in the interrogations.
So one of the stories, one of the things that happened revolved around Ethel's brother, David Greenglass. And the government basically had him change his initial story to implicate Ethel by saying that he passed information to Julius in front of her. His original story indicated that he passed information on a public street corner and Ethel wasn't even around. So he's changing his story to make Ethel look like a bad guy here, even though in reality that may not have been the case.
And he continued to change his story, right?
In the second interview with Ethel's brother, he also indicated that Ethel typed up the secret intel to give to the Russians. Now, he never mentioned this in his first story, so it's believed that the government pressured him into fabricating this story against his sister. That's crazy.
That is.
That not only that the government would do that, but that he would do it. Well, I mean, it makes sense after this next part. In his second interview, which linked his sister to espionage, all charges against David's wife for alleged corruption with the spy ring disappeared. So what's the motive here for changing his story? Well, his wife's off the hook. So he's throwing his sister under the bus to save his wife.
And he was asked about this, and he said, you know, this is my wife. This is the mother of my kids. Yes, I love my sister, but I'm not going to let my wife go down. She needs to stay home and raise our kids.
Yeah, he said that to him, his wife is more important to him than his sister. And those are, I mean, that might actually be the case, but that's cold, man.
Yeah.
Their motive was to punish Ethel as a way to be a deterrent to other potential spies. So they're coming down on her hard in order to teach the rest of America a lesson. Don't be a traitor.
Sending a message, yeah, to all the communist sympathizers in America, and a big statement in the Cold War.
Now, this, and it gets crazier. Like, I promise it gets crazier. But based on that evidence that was provided by Ethel's brother, she was brought in to testify in front of a grand jury. Now, she pled the fifth and refused to answer any questions. So she was placed under arrest. Julius and Ethel were quickly charged with 11 charges of espionage and covert acts.
Yeah, the Fifth Amendment, in case you were not familiar, is basically your right that I don't have to say anything that could implicate me in doing anything wrong, so I can choose not to talk.
I think nowadays she wouldn't even be asked to testify because she was testifying against her husband.
Yep.
So
in 1980, the law changed, and you don't have to testify against your spouse anymore.
Yeah, so just an interesting side note about this case.
Yeah, again, the little things. If this had happened, of course, the Cold War wasn't as big in the 80s. If this had happened in the 80s, she wouldn't have had to get on the stand at all, and she was charged with obstruction and linked into all the other things that Julius was doing. In the government's view, they were the ringleaders of this entire espionage operation that they had cracked. As with all other suspected spies, they put a lot of pressure on Julius and Ethel to give them more names. Who are you reporting to? Who are the people that you're working with? Give us other people that are gathering information for you. But neither of them chose to talk, John. By early 1951, the trial was underway. David Greenglass, again, who is Ethel's brother, was the primary witness for the prosecution in exchange for leniency for himself and for charges being dropped against his wife. He said he had smuggled blueprints and key information on United States nuclear weapons from his job, where he developed the bombs that fell on Japan at the close of World War II. He gave those documents and intelligence to Julius, and that his sister made copies and typed up notes to go alongside the weapons that would be passed along to the Russians. Both Rosenbergs utilized their right of the Fifth Amendment, did not testify in their own defense. And on March 29th of 1951, Julia and Ethel Rosenberg were convicted of espionage against the United States. On April 5th, they were both sentenced to death. One of the leading prosecutors, Roy Cohn, convinced the judge to implement the death penalty, which the judge, who was Judge Kaufman, was initially reluctant to do. Cohn would go on to work for famed communist witch hunter Senator Joseph McCarthy, and that's a big name of somebody who would hunt down communist sympathizers during the Cold War. At sentencing, Judge Kaufman offered an explanation for the harsh sentence, directly attributing the Rosenbergs to American military deaths. This is a quote from him. "I considered your crime worse than murder. I believe your conduct in putting into the hands of the Russian the A-bomb years before our best scientists predicted Russia would perfect the bomb has already caused the communist aggression in Korea, with the resultant casualties exceeding 50,000. Who knows how many millions more of innocent people may pay the price for your treason. You have altered the course of history to the disadvantage of our country." That's really strong.
That's very pointed.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, think about the consequences of their actions, and you think the casualty count could have exceeded 50,000 people because information got into the wrong hands. That's kind of crazy to think about, right?
It is. And again, with like butterfly effect stuff, right? Like, would they have gotten it anyway? Was this inevitable? Would they have just found somebody else to do it? Or was this the direct result of the actions of Julius Rosenberg? And from the evidence we have, I mean, he did it, so he's responsible, but
yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think at some point they would have eventually figured it out or found somebody else, but they found him, he gave it to him, and as a result, they did what they did, and now he's being held responsible. Most Americans supported the idea of executing the Rosenbergs. Of course, there were some that protested, and there were some that even organized some different groups that were trying to work to commute their sentences. In particular, many Americans were very sympathetic toward Ethel. She had two young children at home, and her involvement, even back then, was questionable. And that's before they even knew about the stuff I just told you about,
because
that information wasn't released until much later. So they're looking at her and they're sympathetic because she's a lady, she has children, and basically she's going to leave them as orphans. Many were in favor of commuting their sentences, and they believed that they were victims of antisemitism. So what I'm about to say is crazy, that I'm mentioning these names in a podcast on this show. Albert Einstein advocated for the Rosenbergs. They met with President Harry Truman in hopes of commuting the Rosenbergs' sentences. Even the Pope got involved and pled personally to the president to intervene and save the Rosenbergs' lives. I just said Albert Einstein and the Pope. I mean, how many times in this show would I ever mention them?
I think that's probably a first for both. And yeah, people were definitely advocating for the sentence to be dropped. I'm sure the anti-Semitism buzz was pretty big around this. They were both Jewish citizens from New York. And I don't know, man, this was a really, I know things are awful right now and we see that playing out. These were turbulent times as well. I know we're always quick to say, oh, things are worse now than they ever were. But when you start researching history, every era kind of sucks.
Yeah, my grandfather was in the Air Force around this same time. He was in the Korean War. Soon after that, we had the Vietnam War. Of course, there were social issues back then that still linger today. And yeah, I think you're right. If you look back at all of our different generations, there's baggage with all of those.
Yeah.
There was widespread fear in America about communism. Both Truman and Eisenhower refused to intervene and stop the execution of the Rosenbergs. At the time, federal prisons did not operate any execution chamber, so Julius and Ethel were sent to the state prison of Sing Sing in New York. Now, their execution would end up being delayed because they were Jewish and they didn't want to execute them on their Sabbath day. So they waited a day. During the stay, attorneys made last-minute pleas to try to save the lives of Julius and Ethel, but they went on. So on June 19th, 1953, Julius died in the electric chair at Sing Sing, and as soon as he was passed away, they brought Ethel in, and same thing happened to her. Sad story about Ethel's, sad, I guess, depending on how you view her, but for humanity's sake, I say it's sad. They had to electrocute her at least four or five different times. And finally, they made it so powerful that it ended up burning the hairs on her head, which was not a normal thing that happened. So, I have a best friend of mine is a police officer. He's been tased as part of training, and he said it's unbelievable pain. I asked him the other day, would you rather be pepper sprayed or tased? And he said pepper sprayed. He said the tasing is so intense for just a few seconds, but it's nowhere close to what, or the pepper spray is nowhere close to what that is. So think about that for just a couple of seconds versus what she had there. I mean, it's horrifying if you think about
they tortured her to death.
Yeah. 10,000 people stood outside the funeral of the Rosenbergs. They were the only Americans executed for espionage during the Cold War.
The U.S. investigation, along with accounts from Joseph Stalin, the leader of the USSR, indicated that the information the Rosenbergs collected and gave to Russia significantly expedited the Soviet Union's timeline to develop a nuclear bomb. So even the Russians are crediting them with spurring this forward. However, a view of the materials the Rosenbergs collected casts some doubt on that, as there appears to be little information that the Russians could have used to develop their own nuclear weapons. Declassified materials, I said 1995 or 96, you were right, it was 1995, proved A, that Ethel was not involved to the extent that she was proven guilty of. She had little or no involvement in the spy ring. She was not the one typing up the notes to send along with the documents. Instead, that was David Greenglass's wife. So he took what his wife actually did and attached that to his sister.
So basically, he let his little sister die in order to save his wife.
And it's more than that. Like, he didn't just side with one or the other, tell the truth about one and not say anything about the other. He took his wife's actions and put them on his sister.
He lied in order to save his wife and let his little sister die as a consequence.
And they found that Greenglass was even more involved than was led to believe in the early investigation. And it did also reveal that he was going to get the death penalty if he didn't turn on Julius and Ethel. So in some ways, he's saving his own life as well. In 2001, her brother recanted his testimony and finally said, "Frankly, I think my wife did the typing, but I don't remember." And this is where he said, "My wife is more important to me than my sister or my mother or my father." He has shown no remorse for his false testimony.
So how is it that we're talking about espionage from Julius and Ethel, but yet he's the biggest piece of crap in the story?
Right?
I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
Because he did almost as much of everything that Julius did as far as being the spy, but then he let his sister and brother-in-law be killed without owning up to what he did. The Rosenberg sons had devoted their lives to clearing their parents' names. They've admitted that their father was a spy, but point to evidence indicating that Ethel had nothing to do with it. They've also referenced information from the Soviet Union that shows that the information Julius provided, again, did not directly impact the development of nuclear bombs in the Soviet Union. John, we mentioned that documents were uncovered, and a lot of those were decoded Russian messages, and there's so much interesting stuff in there because they don't use the names of everybody. They use code names. But essentially, if they use your real name, that means you're not a spy. And they used Ethel's real name at some point in there. So that was all super interesting to me. Again, that feels like something that's completely made up. I know there are jobs that are codebreaker jobs, which sounds super interesting, but I don't know. It's to find out that Ethel's innocent and that not only was she charged, not only was she put in prison, she was killed. And as far as we know, wasn't nearly as involved as what people thought.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she probably had some knowledge about what was going on.
She had to.
And so, I mean, she's guilty by association, I think, at best for me. But, I mean, you know, her husband, Julius's actions were bad. They were really bad. He would send thousands and thousands of documents to the guy that was giving this to the Russians. So, I mean, with her knowledge of what was going on and not turning in her husband, she's guilty. You know,
yeah.
That's why it's important to make good friends, folks, because you hang out with bad apples, you're going to turn into one. But, I mean, do you see her being guilty enough to warrant her death?
No, that's an easy no for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm willing to have a conversation whether that was warranted.
Yeah. I guess that's probably where I land too, is Julius probably needs to go because he has hurt America and he has led to the deaths of over 50,000 people there. But
here's the thing, though. Like, they were both told that they could avoid the death penalty if they would just give other names. And they both chose not to do so, I think, which is an interesting thing anyway, because is this them taking one for the team and making sure that the spy work continues without them? Is this them just trying to be noble? John, if we hadn't executed Julius Rosenberg, down the road, maybe they would have gotten some information from him. He's an asset at that point.
Yeah.
Like, even if he doesn't give them names, maybe he can tell them how he was doing it, where people were meeting. Like, I feel like he could have been useful in the Cold War alive eventually. Now, maybe not. Maybe he just rots in prison, and if that's what happens, I'm cool with that. But I feel like the death penalty, not only am I mostly an anti-death penalty guy, but strategically it doesn't make sense to me. It does send the message, so maybe that was better for them in trying to squeeze information out of him. So the message of this will not be tolerated was very loud at this execution. So I guess that was their ultimate goal.
Yeah. Man, I don't even know where to go next on this one.
So you're okay with him getting the death sentence?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I don't love the death sentence in general, but I understand, you know, he did some really messed up stuff, and I'm not going to lose sleep about it. But Ethel, that one breaks my heart, especially when we know in 95 that she really doesn't have any involvement other than she's married to a guy who's making some really crappy decisions. I don't think she deserves to die for that.
Yeah. You know who did? If you say that Julius did, I think her brother did.
Greenglass is, sorry to say this, but just honestly, it makes me so mad. Like, he's the biggest piece of crap I can remember in a long time on here. He did some awful stuff. He lied and got his sister killed to save his wife. And he has no punishment whatsoever. It's ridiculous.
So, yeah, and we talk about this often as well with him getting essentially a plea deal for testifying against them. Maybe they needed him to testify in order to nail Julius for this. It really doesn't seem that way, but perhaps they did. But if they're wanting to send a message, wouldn't killing three people a bigger message than killing two people, or even including his wife in that and saying this is what's going to happen unless you talk, I feel like is almost kind of a weak move.
Yeah, man, I feel like we definitely could have executed him there too.
Yeah.
Instead of his sister.
And I know, like, obviously spy work is very sophisticated, but I wonder just how uncertain that authorities were with what to do. Like, we actually caught some spies, now what do we do? And they were trying to figure it out on the fly, and you wonder if there was any adjustment made after this to say, this is what we would have done differently, this is how we would have presented it to the public, or this is how we'll handle a spy if they If we find out an American is doing this again, we'll try to get information out of them this way instead of just doing an execution. I don't know.
How many spies do you think there are now? Like, is this a problem that still exists?
I think so. I think it absolutely is. And imagine how, like, I don't know that we're like the James Bond stuff is real. Pieces.
Was Snowden a spy? Am I making that up? Like, are there modern cases of spies that have been caught? I don't know.
Well, I mean, their selling of information is, I can't turn on the news, and I usually don't turn on the news with hearing something about Russia getting information from us, whether that's through apps on your phone or through spies. Yeah, I think the spy game is
Did we drop this on American Presidential Election Day on purpose?
Oh, like, goodness. I didn't even think about that.
I don't think we thought about it, but it's happening. Right now it's happening.
Yeah. So if you're listening today, good luck to us all.
May God be ever in our favor. Man. Anything else on this one? Any thoughts?
No, I love stuff like this. I know you're like a traditional crime murder guy. I love spy conversations.
Well, Ethel was murdered. And that's kind of the murder component of this one. But yeah, green glass, what a piece of crap.
Yeah.
So is he dead now? I'm assuming so because he has to be very old.
Yeah. He's gone. And you can't say justice is served because he didn't serve what he deserved.
Yep.
So I don't think justice was served here for Ethel, for our country. Like, our country is the victim of this crime, John.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a person or a family or a town. And I don't think our country got justice because Green Glass and others walked free at some point. They did serve some time after turning on their family. Just none of this seems okay.
And then the 50,000 lives in the Korea stuff. So, man, the crazy case. Kyle, thanks for bringing this one to us. Jamie, I know you enjoyed it. I hope you all did too. If you liked what you heard, don't forget you can leave a rating and a review over on iTunes. We have t-shirts available over, well, I say t-shirts. We have all kinds of merchandise available over on TeePublic. The link for that is pinned to the top of our Twitter and Facebook page.
Let me tell you, I ordered a new shirt last week. Pay a little extra and get the Tri-Blend shirt. It is super soft.
We don't make extra money for that, but you're doing yourself a favor. It is a nice quality shirt. You also got a coffee mug, and it looks great.
Been rocking it every day.
Super happy with those. I've not seen anybody order a mask yet. So if you order a mask, please take a picture of that. Send it to us. We'd love to see how those look.
We have a new Patreon episode up that went up this weekend, so it was a blast. If you haven't joined us on Patreon, now's definitely a time to do that because it was a really interesting, fun, upbeat situation.
We talked about crazy lawsuits, and Jamie and I kind of had a contest. We each did our research. We found some frivolous lawsuits, and we talked about what happened as a result of those cases, so really fun stuff. There was a story at the beginning of that Patreon episode you're not going to want to miss. It's about a skull that was found in somebody's house. Very interesting. Very lighthearted. Go check it out.
Yep. Guys, we appreciate you listening. We'll be back next week with another big case.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast. Distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.